طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news from Palestine and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal military occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. We ask our listeners, as we do every week, were you involved last week in the Palestine-Israel peace movement and the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's savage military attacks against them to force them out of their homes and annex their properties into Israel? Did you speak out on the atrocities Israel is committing every day in Gaza and the West Bank? If not, what is your reason not to? It is Sunday, August 23rd, 2009. We begin with a summary of news highlights. Early this month, Human Rights Watch released a report entitled White Flag Deaths, Killings of Palestinian Civilians During Operation Cast Lead. Operation Cast Lead, as you know, is Israel's name for its monstrous military attack against the imprisoned civilian population of Palestinians in Gaza. Among the more than 1,400 Palestinian civilians who were killed, assassinated would be a more fitting word, Human Rights Watch focused on seven incidents where 11 innocent civilians, including five women and four children, were deliberately murdered by Israeli soldiers while they were carrying white flags. The lead author of the report, Fred Abrahams, appeared on the Monday edition of Democracy Now! Israel's deputy permanent representative to the United Nations, Daniel Carmon, predictably declined an invitation to appear in the program with Human Rights Watch and preferred to talk over the telephone. No Israeli official has ever, in memory, appeared for a face-to-face debate on any alleged wrongdoing by Israel. Carmon hemmed and hawed and went on a wild tangent of drivel about the report, saying that they tend to, in his words, mislead in a conception that takes it to a generalized world, if you know what I mean. Some of the incidents mentioned in the Human Rights Watch report were covered in detail in the Tuesday edition of Democracy Now! We repeat them here because they bear repeating and repeating and repeating. In the village of Khuza, the Najjar family were ordered by Israeli soldiers to get out of their house and head toward the village center. When they did so, bearing white flags, a soldier suddenly appeared on the stairs of a house down the street, took deliberate aim and shot Rauhiya Najjar, 47, dead under the eyes of her 15-year-old daughter, Hiba. In the Jabalia refugee camp, Mr. Khaled Abid Rabbu's family were ordered out of their home by Israeli soldiers over a megaphone. Mr. Abid Rabbu came out with his mother, his wife, and three young daughters, all holding white flags. They waited 7 minutes while two soldiers atop a tank ate chips and chocolate. Suddenly, a soldier emerged from the tank and fired at the children. Mr. Abid Rabbo's 7-year-old daughter, Suad, died almost instantly. His 2-year-old daughter, Amal's intestines fell out, and she died a few hours later because the Israeli soldiers would not allow ambulances into the area. And his 4-year-old daughter, Samar, was shot in the back, chest, and stomach, and is now paralyzed from the waist down. Israel continued to claim that Hamas used civilians as human shields and further claimed that its soldiers saw Hamas fighters hiding behind civilians, even children in Gaza, carrying white flags. But Human Rights Watch investigators on the ground could not find any evidence to support these allegations and were denied access to the soldiers who purportedly made those claims. In addition, on-the-ground investigations by the British newspaper The Guardian some months ago showed videos of Israeli soldiers routinely using Palestinian civilians as human shields during their obscene military attacks against civilian population centers in the West Bank. Frankly, we don't know which Israeli lie to believe. May all the victims of Gaza never be forgotten. May their image never fade from public memory. We honor them now with a minute of silence. We will continue to bear witness loudly, day after day after day, until Israel is made accountable for its war crimes and its crimes against humanity. On Friday, August 21st, the International Women's Commission for a Just and Sustainable Palestinian-Israeli Peace visited the East Jerusalem neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah and stood shoulder to shoulder with the Al-Hanun, Ghawi, and Al-Kurd families who were forcibly evicted from their homes in East Jerusalem and demanded that they be reinstated in their homes. The commission was headed by former Vice President of the European Parliament, Luisa Morgantini, accompanied, among others, by Simon Susskind, President of Actions in the Mediterranean, Salwa Hudeib, Deputy Minister of the Ministry of Women's Affairs, Naomi Chazan, former Deputy Speaker of the Knesset and Professor of Political Affairs Emerita at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, and Galia Golan, Professor of Government Emerita at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. The holy month of Ramadan started yesterday. We take this opportunity to express to our Muslim friends everywhere our best wishes for a spiritually fulfilling and happy Ramadan. Unfortunately, our brothers and sisters in Gaza will not be able to participate as fully as they have the right to, because Israel closed all crossings yesterday, the first day of Ramadan, and announced that the closings will continue at least through today, thus preventing any shipments of supplies into Gaza, and denying Palestinians their fundamental human right to practice their faith. Hamas has promised to give $100 in food aid to each of 78,000 families in Gaza. Israel has added yet another layer of intensely oppressive measures against Palestinians, particularly Palestinians who wish to cross over to Jordan or return home from Jordan. The level of mistreatment and abuse has escalated considerably at the border, severely restricting the movement of Palestinian civilians. In addition, Israel has instituted measures to restrict the movement of human rights workers in the occupied West Bank. Our brothers and sisters in Palestine have issued a call for an international campaign for the freedom of movement for Palestinians. The campaign has taken on the name of Karama, which means dignity, honor, nobility in Arabic. The first meeting of the campaign was held in Ramallah on August 8, 2009. The purpose of the campaign is to raise global awareness of the ever-increasing oppressive abuses and restrictions Palestinians are experiencing to their mobility while traveling to and from Jordan and Egypt and in moving about in occupied Palestine. Today we have the privilege of discussing these and other matters with Dr. Ahmed Jamil Azam. Dr. Azam received his PhD from the University of Edinburgh for his dissertation entitled Jerusalem and the Politics of Settlement in the Middle East, and is a frequent contributor to the United Arab Emirates newspaper Al-Ittihad and Jordan's newspaper Al-Ghad. He joins us now by telephone. Good afternoon, Dr. Ahmed Jamil Azam, and thank you for being our guest in This Week in Palestine.
Good afternoon.
Please talk to us about the measures Israel recently instituted at the border with Jordan and the difficulties which I believe you have personally experienced.
Actually, maybe it is difficult to start with the recent measures. Let me please take a minute to speak about our memory in this.
Certainly.
Because crossing the borders between Jordan and Palestine is a kind of essential part of our childhood memory. We have all the time this suffering. 25 years ago, 30 years ago, we have always this humiliation on the crossing the border. I remember 25 years ago and 30 years ago that we had to go to spend 24 hours in a trip that it is 60 kilometers. Again, it is 60 kilometers from Amman to Jericho, but you have to spend sometimes 12 hours. You have to sleep on the borders, in the station of the borders, in order to cross the borders. You have to be investigated several times during this trip. Even as a children, even as a woman, an old person, at that time, maybe now it's stopped, that at that time you have to get fully naked to investigate it, to inspect you. Now, for example, last summer, the trip, again, it is 60 kilometers, but I have to spend 7 hours in this trip. You have to change transportation at least 5 to 6 times, because every few kilometers you have to change the bus. The Israeli soldiers have their measures and processes that you don't understand. You have to leave your bus and go to another bus. Then again, you have to change the bus. You have to go in such measures. So it is always part of the Palestinian, let me say, modern history, that everyone who is crossing the borders always have this bad memories about how he will be treated during his trip. We have always a kind of mental difficulties to understand this.
Well, it is not meant to be understood. It is meant to humiliate.
Exactly. And this is maybe what make it more difficult. Because when you, for example, when you, let me give you only one example that I myself find it always very difficult. When we leave the borders from the what I can say the Israeli side, the soldiers, you will get your bags with you in the bus. Mm-hmm. That you use to go to Jordan.
Yeah.
After only 3 to 4 kilometers, you have to come down from the bus and to search for your bags that will be laid out in the sun in a temperature of 45 degrees or 40 degrees Celsius, that looking for your bags, having it again and loading it in another bus in a very chaotic way and very chaotic, which I think it is meant to be very chaotic way. And you have then this process, it takes around 1 hour. Only this process, and always the humiliation in it, that you don't understand why you do it. It is because you feel always that you want to be humiliated. It is meant that you must be humiliated, and this is make it more and more difficult all the time. It will happen again. After a few kilometers, you have to change the bus again. Why, you don't understand.
Let me ask you, if I may, those few kilometers that you mentioned, are they in Jordan?
No, actually, it is, let me describe the way from Amman to Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
You will have around 20 to 25 kilometers from Amman to the Jordanian side of the borders.
Mm-hmm.
That you will spend there an hour or something like this, then you will leave. It is a normal border, let me say. The same measures you will face when you are leaving to any another country, from Jordan to Syria to another country. Then, at the moment you are on the bridge on the river, Jordan River, you have to stop. The bus has to stop there, and you have to wait. I remember 3 years ago, we spent 4 hours, exactly 4 hours, inside the bus, 50 persons, children, babies, women, men, old people, 4 hours waiting the soldier. We, all of us, were looking to the one single soldier who is looking for at us and waiting his finger to move. Only, and I will never ever forget that moment, that 4 hours we are not allowed to go out of the bus. waiting his finger to move. I remember his, until now, it is maybe 2 or 3 years. Now, I remember his finger when it was moved to tell us, come. And then we moved around 200 meters for to reach him, come down from the bus, and then go to another bus, and then continue. This is a type of way we deal. Let me tell you, in Oslo Accord in 1994, it was agreed that all this humiliation and mistreatment must be ended.
Mm-hmm.
And also it was agreed that Israelis themselves should disappear on the borders. That as a temporary measurement at that time, interim agreement, that Israelis will stay there to watch, but Palestinian policemen will take their place.
Yeah. And
this continued for a few years. Then in the when the Al-Aqsa uprising happened, they stopped everything, and the Israelis came again to manage everything. And Palestinian policemen are not allowed in this stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there anything that Jordan can do to protest this kind of action?
Actually, Jordanian citizens are also a part of, facing the same problem.
Well, that's why Jordan could have standing. It has standing to protest against the ill treatment of its citizens.
Exactly. So I think partly Jordan can help. But what I think also that, firstly, Jordan, secondly, and maybe firstly even, the Palestinian leadership, the PLO leadership and the Palestinian Authority, and the international community. I think everybody should, because crossing the border is not, we are suffering when we are traveling from and to Palestine. But also, let us speak about another aspect of the problem. There are hundreds, millions actually, of Arabs, Christians and Muslims are not allowed even to visit Jerusalem or their holy places in Bethlehem or Nazareth or anywhere. We have this problem also that people are not allowed. When you are speaking about crossing the borders, people who are allowed to cross the borders are the Palestinians who live in the West Bank and a few hundred thousands living abroad among them. But there are millions who are not allowed to visit. There are Palestinians who never visited their homeland. And even when you are inside West Bank, you don't have this freedom of movement. Again, I am from a village, a very old village known in the history called, in Arabic, Al-Izariya, in English or in the Bible, called Bethany.
Mm-hmm.
Bethany is a well-known village. And we have, let me say, documents for say that we are a family living there for hundreds of years. But in the last 18 years, we are not allowed to visit Jerusalem. We are 4 kilometers away from the holy places inside Jerusalem. We can see, actually, the holy places inside Jerusalem from our homes, but we are not allowed to cross the wall, the barrier, separation barrier. And for 18 years now, I never visited Jerusalem. My children, who were all born after that, they never been in Jerusalem. And it is like now I remember last month or last year in the school, they were asked to write a short story for something in their life. And I found that 2 among 3 of my children decided to speak about their trip to Palestine, firstly, and they speak how they, firstly, they wanted to imagine that they visited Jerusalem. And they started to ask me about describing Jerusalem to them, describing even a kind of restaurant in Jerusalem, describing an ice cream shop in Jerusalem so they can write their story. Then they decided at the end to write that how they were forbidden from visiting Jerusalem.
Mm.
And this is actually, when Arabs speak, there are millions of Arabs who want to visit Jerusalem, who want to visit the Holy Land, Christians and Muslims again, and all are not allowed. And so I think this is an international issue that must be raised.
It is an international issue, absolutely.
Yeah, Israel claims all the time that it is a democratic country, that they keep the freedom of religion and human rights. But let us look. There are dozens of millions, tens of millions of Muslims, millions of Arab Christians who are not allowed there. This should be discussed.
Yes, unfortunately, the international community, if such a community exists, is totally unable to move and without the United States. And a legacy of former President Bush is that the international community always followed what the United States said. And it was a hands-off policy.
And this is why now with President Barack Obama in the White House, and he wants to open a new page in the relations between the East and West, I think such suffering inside the West Bank and Gaza must be raised. Because I myself have a relatively short trip from Amman to Bethany, where it is, as I said earlier, around to Jericho, 60 kilometers. Again, but my trip will be around 80 kilometers. But other people who wants to move to the north of West Bank or the south of West Bank to Hebron or to Jenin or other countries, they have to spend another maybe 6 to 7 hours to reach there. Because there are checkpoints also on the streets.
Yeah, but those checkpoints are really not checkpoints. They're not meant to be checkpoints. They're meant to immobilize the population. They're meant to choke all the economy out of cities and towns. That's what the purpose of those so-called checkpoints is. But they're always described as a security measure. But that's the idea. The idea is to choke off all life out of the cities, and to kill the economy.
Yeah, and in addition to this, let us speak about the bypass roads. Now, a village like mine, Bethany, again, Al-Azariya, is surrounded with settlements from two sides. I never saw it myself. I never been there myself. There are a huge land called a huge settlement called Maali Adumim is built.
Yeah,
my grandfather told me that this land, part of this land, is belongs to our family, as similar of the other families of the same village. Most of the land belong to the families of Al-Azari or Bethany. I never been on this land, but I can see from far away the settlement built there. So, but now our village is surrounded with settlements from two directions, at least from two sides. And from other two sides, we have this separation barrier. Actually, we were left with only two streets that can lead us out from the village. And this is only a model. In Qalqilia, in Qalqilia in the north of West Bank, it is surrounded totally from the four directions with the wall, separation wall, and there is one gate opened every day. I don't think anybody will expect that this is any kind of a humanitarian life, or that that we can have peace and peaceful atmosphere, or in such kind of treatment or such life.
That's true. I mean, you have one gate through which, the population of Qalqilia is about 45,000, in addition to all the people who are in the area. Who do depend on Qalqilia.
And you have people want to go to work, or people want to go to hospitals. The gate is closed at the evening of every day.
Yeah.
And sometimes in some Israeli holidays, public holidays, they close the gate all the day.
Well, is Qalqilia sitting atop an aquifer?
Yeah, exactly. The barrier now, you can say that the wall is on the. It is not between Israel and the West Bank. The barrier is actually inside the West Bank.
It is inside. But, yes.
Yeah, it is inside the West Bank, and at least 8% of the land of West Bank, which is already a small part of historical Palestine, it is only 6,000 kilometers out of 27 kilometers that is forming historical Palestine. And also the wall is leaving a huge part of 8% of the West Bank west to the wall, and Palestinians who own this land are not allowed. In East Jerusalem alone, let me tell you, in East Jerusalem alone, 125,000 persons are now east to the wall. Israel in the west, West Bank in the east, they are now supposed to be part of East Jerusalem, but they left east to the wall, and so they lived in a very small area between the West Bank and Jerusalem, with many restrictions for their movement in the two directions. We are speaking again about 125 persons left in this small strips of lands.
Yes, this was part of Sharon's plan of putting Palestinians in a separate area where they would need to have different ID papers and different work papers, and so they would not theoretically belong to Jerusalem. And in fact, they would be considered aliens, as illegal aliens. And in an interview with Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, I think it's about 3 or 4 years ago, April, former Prime Minister Sharon said that as soon as the wall is completed, he will move to expel all illegal aliens. Those are all the Palestinians who now reside in areas for which they do not have the so-called appropriate IDs that Israel would not provide them with anyway. That was part of the plan. The Judaization of Jerusalem continues.
It continues. Today only we have a new settlement declared. Now in Haaretz a few hours ago, it's published about a new settlement in East Jerusalem with a new 200 housing units. Despite of all the what is said to be a pressure from the new administration in Washington on Israel, but settlements are continuing. Now we have around 200,000 Israeli settlers in East Jerusalem beside the 300,000 in West Bank. And if we want to remember, in 1994, when Oslo Accord was signed, there were only 110,000 settlers in the West Bank. Now we have 300,000.
Yes.
Which, why we can understand now why, or let me speak only about two figures. The population growth in Israel in the last 5 years is no more than 1.8% yearly, mm-hmm. annually. In the settlements, it is 5% at least. So when Israel justifying building new settlements by the natural growth, this is completely not correct. Because, as I said, in Israel, the population growth is no more than 1.8.
Mm-hmm.
While in settlements, it is 4 times like this.
Yes. Well, it doesn't look as if this is going to change. And that settlement is continuing, but it's only because President Obama is not putting additional pressure on the Israelis. How about the movement of people inside the West Bank?
As you mentioned, we have around 600 checkpoints that were meant to make it very difficult from place to place. And now also it is very difficult to from north of West Bank to east of south of West Bank. Today, the settlement today that declared today the 200 new houses between Maale Adumim and Jerusalem, it is part of a plan called E1. This plan E1 is meant to make it completely impossible to have connection between the North West Bank and South West Bank. And people, we used to move from our area in Bethany to Bethlehem in 15 minutes, to Ramallah in 15 to 20 minutes. Now to move to Bethlehem, you have to go in a very difficult, rigid way that takes around 90 minutes to Bethlehem. To Ramallah, if checkpoints are not closed at that day, you have more than 1 hour. And so people are actually, and the wall, the separation wall, make it very difficult for people to work, to study, to do many things. I can tell you many stories about people closed their shops. People inside Jerusalem have to move out because they cannot work there. And this is the moment that Israel wants. That when the moment they live outside Jerusalem, they withdraw their ID. They withdraw their identity card that allow them to live in Jerusalem. So people there felt every day that they are facing a kind of war on in every single movement they have, in every single step they stepping out of their homes, even inside their homes. Again, our land that confiscated to build Maale Adumim, while our family has no place now to build any new homes. Inside Jerusalem, in the last since 1967, no house is allowed to be built for Arabs, while tens of thousands of flats and houses built for Israeli settlers.
Mm.
To get a permission to build a house in Jerusalem, you have to spend only the fees of the license is around $30,000 to $35,000 U.S. dollars, and it takes 5 years to get the license. And in most of the cases, after spending years, you are not allowed to build. And if you build a room or part of a house, enlarge your house to accommodate in the new. New people, the people get married, the house will be demolished.
You know, Dr. Azam, the tide is turning. We detect here in the United States that there is a subtle shift in the tide. And that people are less supportive of Israel than they were before. And Israel is also feeling international pressure because of its attack against Gaza. So there is a subtle shift which is not reflected yet in policy. It's not reflected yet in the Congress. Unfortunately, there were two delegations from the United States Congress that went to Israel to swear their allegiance to the State of Israel. But there is a subtle shift. And
I am happy to hear this.
Yes.
I'm really happy to hear this. Because actually in Europe, for example, in Europe we can feel that people there now know more and more about the reality in the Palestinian territories. We can feel that they understand what is going on. The Arab people has nothing against the Americans or the American administration. All of us like to study in American universities. We read English. We try to learn English. We know that the what knowledge we can get in the U.S. We have many things that we like in the U.S. But it is only the political issue that make people are not happy with the American administration. And I think you mentioned at the beginning the new campaign in the West Bank, Al Karama, which is actually it is a new movement among the Arab among the Palestinians. Now the Palestinians feel more or less that the international community, governments, even their own political leaderships are not taking enough action to protect their rights. So now we have several campaigns inside the West Bank. We have campaigns in Lebanon, for example, also. People want to protect their documents because they have a problem of the lost documents and traveling documents in Lebanon, the Palestinians there. There is a new campaign on this in Lebanon. We have several campaigns now there. For example, in addition to Al-Karama campaign on the free movement and the Israeli measures on the borders, there is another campaign started also a few weeks ago. It's about new Israeli measures that to deport people who want to live there. So let me give you, let us suppose that an American person or a European want to go and live and do business in the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Before, he used to get a visa to and stay there for a few months, maybe a year. Now, in the last few months, a new Israeli measurement said that every such person must leave the Palestinian territory every month. So every month a businessman who wants to stay there must go to Jordan, for example, or another country for 1 day to get a visa to go again, to go in again. Yesterday I was reading in the newspaper about a case of an old woman, 70 years old, has an American passport. She is from Palestine. She's a Palestinian originally, but she has no Palestinian documents now. She's 70 years old, wanted to go back to her village in the West Bank to live there. And for the last year, it was fine with her to stay there. In the last 2 months, they asked her that every month she must leave out, to go out and come again, and this will depend on her. And in our experience, we know that what Israel is doing, that at the beginning they do a kind of a new restriction with exceptions. For example, when they imposed the sanction on Jerusalem at the beginning, they said you can go using a kind of special permission. Gradually, they made permissions is more difficult. Then they stopped permissions. So now they are saying people must leave every month. We expect in the future that they will say you are not allowed to come again.
Well, we have heard of visas that are only for 1 week.
There is 1 week visa, and now also another thing. Before it was visa means that you can go to Jerusalem, you can go to Israel, you can stay in the West Bank. But now there are special visa for every area. So if you have a visa for the West Bank, you are not allowed to go into Jerusalem or to go to other places. So if you want to be a businessman, and Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, Mr. Netanyahu, is saying that he is promoting a kind of economic peace. Okay, how can economic peace happen if a person who has his, let me say, British or American passport is coming to the West Bank to do business there, and he needs to have a kind of relation to import and export his trade or
his goods
and and this has to be done through the Israeli boards. And if he is not allowed to move, how this peace or this economy can flourish?
Well, as for Mr. Netanyahu and everybody else, it is lie after lie, and you don't know which lie to believe. That part that you mentioned is Area C. So people, Palestinians who want to go to the West Bank are only allowed in Area C. which is composed of 13 non-contiguous areas. East Jerusalem is out of bounds. And somebody is expected, I don't know how, but it is as if Palestinians and visitors are expected to suddenly appear at one of the enclaves under nominal PA control without passing through the intervening areas controlled by Israel. So you have to jump from one part of Area C to another part of Area C without going through an area controlled by Israel, which is impossible.
Exactly, it's impossible. And many times soldiers know that this is impossible, and they decide if you want to buy, if you will allow you to pass from one area to another or not. And always you don't understand why they allow or why they don't allow. And when you go out from your home at morning, you don't know exactly when you will come back. Again, about this permissions, giving permissions and then starting restrictions. Also, a new measure, Israeli measures, that people who has permissions to go and work inside Jerusalem or west of the separation barrier, before they were allowed to go there as long as they have the permission. Now they started a new thing that they must come back before 7 o'clock. And they have to sign that, and they have to have a kind of a proof. They have to scan their ID that they returned before 7 o'clock evening. Otherwise, maybe they will be fined or going to the jail.
Dr. Azam, I'm sorry for interrupting, but we are running out of time. In the next minute or two, is there a message that you would like to give the American people?
The message, actually, it is to the American people and everybody, that many people, many Palestinians, feel their life is a big lie. Some of us already had a very good achievement in terms of academy, financial, many of us in the Gulf, but we don't feel safe. Maybe we are living in some area, some our refugees managed to go out from their difficulties in terms of financially and other things, but all the time we don't feel safe. We are not connected to our family. We don't know what is happening with us tomorrow. And this is really making us in a very difficult situation. I want my daughters and children to not think of politics. I want them to think about their academic future, about their career and other things. But no possibility. They will keep continue to think and read and write politics all the time. I want this to finish. And thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Azam, for being our guest today. Allah ma'akum. It was a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. And that is all we have for today. We wish our brothers and sisters in Palestine a very happy Ramadan, and to all our listeners a pleasant and restful weekend. This is Sharif Fahm for This Week in Palestine, reminding everyone to get involved. Get involved. خيام إلى بلد مهجر من مخيم إلى بلد مهجر تسكلون